Welcome back to The Wise Man's Page, the podcast where we read Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear page by page. This is page 66. "I'm sorry," I said helplessly. "I don't speak." But she was already pushing herself up and away from the table. Wiping at her face, she ran for the door. Anchors stared at me from behind the bar, as did everyone else in the room. "That was not my fault," I said, pointing at the door. "She went crazy on her own." I would have followed her and tried to unravel it all, but she was already outside, and my admissions interview was less than an hour away. Besides, if I tried to help every woman Ambrose had ever traumatized, I wouldn't have time left for eating or sleeping. On the upside, the bizarre encounter seemed to have cleared my head, and I no longer felt gritty and thick with lack of sleep. I decided I might as well take advantage of it and get admissions out of the way. "Sooner begun is sooner done," as my father used to say. On my way to Hollows, I stopped to buy a golden brown meat pie from a vendor's cart. I knew I'd need every penny for this term's tuition, but the price of a decent meal wasn't going to make much difference one way or the other. It was hot and solid, full of chicken and carrot and sage. I ate it while I walked, reveling in the small freedom of buying something according to my taste rather than making do with whatever anchor happened to have at hand. As I finished the last bit of crust, I smelled honeyed almonds. I bought a large scoop in a clever pouch made from a dried corn husk. It cost me 4 drabs, but I hadn't had honeyed almonds in years, and some sugar in my blood wouldn't hurt when I was answering questions. The line for admissions wound through the courtyard. Not abnormally long, but irritating nonetheless. I saw a familiar face from the fishery and went to stand next to a young green-eyed woman who was waiting to queue up as well. "Hello there," I said. "You're Amelia, aren't you?" She gave me a nervous smile and a nod. "I'm Quoth," I said, making a tiny bow. "I know who you are," she said. "I've seen you in the artificery." "You should call it the fishery," I said. I held out the pouch. "Would you like a honeyed almond?" Amelia shook her head. "They're really good," I said, joggling them enticingly in the corn husk pouch. She reached out hesitantly and took one. And that's the page.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jordana.
And I'm Jeremy.
So Quoth's acting weird immediately.
There's so much weird things happening that I definitely like didn't catch on the first read, but I was there's one weird thing, and I'm like, and another.
Yeah.
Because it gets weirder and weirder, right? Like it's like, first of all, the first kind of stuff he does is stuff that doesn't seem out of the ordinary for a person to do. But if we know enough about Quoth's character, it seems a little weird. Like, he is stopping to buy a meat pie, and then he stops to buy honeyed almonds right after that.
Yeah, it's not just a little weird, especially in light of the fact that he refused to hang out with Fella just a few pages ago. He refused to buy a snack and have lunch with her, whereas now he's, you know, spending freely. I hope that him calling the woman crazy was also the result of a plumb bob, because it's not a good look to call a woman crazy under any circumstances.
Yes.
I might have misheard you. What did you say? It's not okay to call a person crazy?
A woman in particular crazy.
I mean any person. Because her actions do seem very strange. Like, she just, like, some person who he doesn't know offers him a drink, sits down, like, has a very brief chat, and then just bursts into tears and leaves. Like, that's weird behavior.
Yeah, exactly. She's acting really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not nice to call someone crazy, but that behavior, no matter who it is, is,
there's not too many other words for it.
Yeah, like, for him to say it out loud is again, like, definitely something he shouldn't be doing. But, like, Quoth has done worse things.
Yeah,
it's not that weird to me to have him approach Amelia and strike up a conversation. I mean, he hasn't really done this kind of thing before where he approaches someone who's kind of a casual stranger, but that's not super weird.
I think we're missing something about his demeanor though, because of like, think about her reaction to him.
That's a really good observation.
Well, I think
like her reaction to him is not really friendly.
Yeah, but I think if a stranger approaches, especially a woman, but if a stranger approaches anybody out of the blue and says, "Hi, what's your name? You want a candy?" Like, that's a little weird. But it's like mostly friendly and harmless, right?
But like Jordana says, what's not on the page is his demeanor. I agree with Jordana that he's probably already visibly acting strange. Also, it's weirdly aggro.
She gave me a nervous smile. Like, yeah,
you could write
Jordana,
that off.
If a red-haired stranger approached you and said, "Would you like a candy?" Would you not be nervous?
Right. Well, she knows who he is, obviously. He says, "I'm Kvothe," and she says, "I know." So she probably knows him by reputation, and you could write off her nervous demeanor as being just kind of starstruck. But I think that Jordan is right, that there's something not written about how he is. Also, it's very aggro to immediately correct her and tell her, "You should call it the fishery." Again,
that is what marks his behavior out as weird to me.
Yeah, it goes, again, uncommented in the text. But if you, and you should by now in the book, know his character, you'll see that that's out of it.
Yes, and we find out later that what the drug that he has been drugged with does is it removes his, like, behavioral
inhibition.
Filter. Yeah, it just, like, completely removes his filter, so he says whatever comes into his head, and he behaves exactly as he would be inclined to behave if there was no sense of propriety holding him back.
Right, which is a clever thing to dose someone like Kvothe with, someone who relies so heavily on their reputation, their mystique. And also, it would tend to reinforce Ambrose's prejudice about the Ru as, you know, wildlings who indulge in their every vice and whim.
Now, do you mean that it is reinforced, it is going to make other people feel about the Ru the way Ambrose already feels about the Ru? Because he's the one who drugged it, so he knows what it's going to do to him.
Yeah, I think it, I don't know if this is Ambrose's intention necessarily, but he's not just giving Kvothe enough rope to hang himself, because he's obviously also tying and setting the noose himself, but he's sort of, through this poisoning, giving him a chance to confirm people's worst suspicions about him. That he's, you know, arrogant and no sense of propriety and, you know, possibly a violent rapist, as we brush against in coming pages. And we understand at his core that he's not, which is possibly Rothfuss avoiding that issue altogether, and also possibly having him reinforce to us how deeply intrinsically good Kvothe is. But that's not on the page, so we'll get to it eventually.
Mm-hmm. But it is,
and there's going to be more of this on the next page.
Oh yeah,
and this whole passage is a really good tool for us, the reader, to see exactly what kind of person Kvothe is, because who is he when he's not thinking about what other people are going to think of him? What does he do when those filters are removed?
Which is something that I think we all wonder about ourselves.
Yes. Well, and like, this is often explored in fiction in a variety of ways. Like, who, like, there's, you know, TV episodes where characters are like reduced to their teenage selves, or they lose their memories, they forget who they are. And we just get to see like how they behave, like what characteristics are intrinsic to that person versus what characteristics are like things that they have been shaped by their circumstances or their social environment.
Yeah.
It's like the possible TNG... though. Right. Is it not possible that someone's inhibitions is part of who they are intrinsically? So to remove them is not going to give you an idea of who they really are. Because you've just removed something that is already them.
Changes. I mean, there's a theory of the self that personality is really just a series of many, many layers of coping mechanisms
and performance.
Yeah, and that no one ever truly sees the person that we are to ourselves in our own heads without all of those mechanisms in place. So maybe this is a gift.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I am inclined to think that there is no person for whom their inhibitions are an intrinsic part of who they are. Those have been shaped by something.
Mm-hmm. They're a reaction rather than, like, being something that's at their core.
Because, like, if you are a person who, say, at their core, like, would never, would never drink or never, you know, like, jaywalk, then taking this drug wouldn't make you do that.
Right.
Okay.
But if you're only not jaywalking because those are the rules and you suddenly don't care about the rules, then you'll do it.
But what if you are, like, intrinsically a shy person? Or are you arguing that that's not possible?
No, I'm, you know.
No, because maybe
they're the same as inhibitions.
Yeah, maybe there's someone out there who just, like, doesn't feel like talking to other people.
And so would they not?
Yeah.
Who can say, Jordana?
Yeah, I think they would. I think that, like, I don't think Quoth would have approached this person out of the blue if he hadn't lost his inhibition.
We do have a magical drug that takes away all your inhibitions. It's called cocaine.
Look, there are many drugs.
Is that really how cocaine works?
I mean, from what I've heard.
I can report that the way Quoth feels and acts on this page is close in line with the way cocaine makes some people feel.
I like that you said that like a robot.
Very cagey. I think that there are other substances that, like, lower your inhibitions in a certain way, but I don't think there's anything like...
Well, I mean, that's the appeal of alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they call it the social lubricant. But it has other effects, right? They actually compare this drug to alcohol in a few pages, and it's like, but I don't feel drunk, right? But it does have the thing in common where, like, you're loosened up, you're not as inhibited. You're more willing to, like, talk to strangers or make an ass of yourself or say something that you probably wouldn't say to somebody if you were sober.
Right. I find there's something kind of frightening about being alchemically disinhibited rather than just chemically disinhibited. Like, it might just be Quoth's attitude toward alchemy, but I feel like alchemy is far more sinister.
Yeah, we've been set up to feel that alchemy is sinister.
Is there anything else to say about the page? Because we do have a letter today.
Yeah. I do have one more thing on the alchemy is sinister. Because I think the reason that alchemy is sinister is probably because, A, you don't really know what's going to happen. Because you can be sneakier with it. And also, it has, like, especially this alchemy, it has an immediate reaction, whereas, like, if you were to have alcohol, you kind of feel it coming,
and you probably have to have, like, more than a few for it to come on, whereas this just sort of comes on right away.
Yeah, it's not instant.
Yeah.
All right,
that was my piece. So
this letter is from Mads, and the subject is apple pie. Ooh, Mads writes, hi, delicious. Thanks for a great podcast. Here is my take on the making of apple pie. I am reading Rothfuss and Quoth saying that storytelling, making apple pie, is hard. Anybody can make bread, but a good story is hard. And people think that making a story, Quoth is making a legend, and Rothfuss is writing a trilogy, is easy. But people have never tried. It is a subtle hint that the appreciative readers notice and love, while the impatient reader waiting for the doors of stone will miss. It is like Quoth's stunt at the Aeolian. Regards, Mads from Copenhagen, Denmark. And Mads is referring to the metaphor of Quoth, or Innkeeper Coat, rather, talking about why, you know, cake is easy, pies are hard.
You know what?
What a pie it shall be!
I love it. I think that's a great... I don't know if that's what Rothfuss intended. This is a case of me not caring what Rothfuss intended, because I think that is a really lovely thought, a lovely metaphor. I endorse it wholeheartedly.
So the intention of the author is not important.
In this one particular case, I am not concerned.
All right. I'll just let that hang. Anything else to say, friends?
I think that... No, wait. I've got something on this. I would argue that writing a book is not like apple pie, it is like cookies, because I don't think that, like, I don't necessarily need the Doors of Stone in order to appreciate The Name of the Wind and The Wise Man's Fear. Cookies can be enjoyed before they're baked, and you will still like the cookie dough whether the cookies come or not. Therefore, writing a book is like cookies.
I mean, I just think I disagree with you that, like, I will be unfulfilled. I will be hollow and empty inside if I never, ever, ever get the Doors of Stone.
See, I don't have that. Like, I want the Doors of Stone, I do, but, like, it's icing on the cake of two already good books.
I think the Doors of Stone is the dessert. You know, this is a three-course meal. We've had a lovely aperitif, a satisfying main, and we could get up and leave now, but we'd always be wondering, you know,
what was dessert going to be?
Prefix three-course meal.
Guys, I'm really hungry now. We have to stop.
And of course, slow regard is the wine pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we've stretched this food metaphor out about as far as we can, like butter scraped over too much bread. And
talk a little bit more about food and inhibitions and such.
And tomorrow. The nature of the self.
And the death of the author on another page
of
The
Wind.